On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Charlie LaDuff lays it down rough in the gonzo journalism tradition of Hunter S. Thompson and Jack Kerouac. He's crossed the desert with Mexican immigrants, worked in cannery and hog factory, gone deep with New York firemen after 9/11. Now, Charlie LaDuff brings us the stories of a year on the road, going deep across the country with American men. Not high flyers, not fancy men or rich or even well off, just guys, U.S. guys, as LaDuff calls them, out on the edge of polite society, on the edge of the American dream, on the edge of patience with what globalization and downsizing and sexual politics have dealt them. Up next on Point, Tales of American Men on the Edge with Charlie LaDuff. Joining me now from Detroit is Charlie LaDuff, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and former national correspondent for the New York Times. His new book is U.S. Guys, The True and Twisted Mind of the American Man. Charlie LaDuff, thanks for being with us.
You're a gentleman for having me. I appreciate it.
You may be right and you may be wrong about that gentleman stuff.
You and us guys, huh?
Maybe. So there you are, out there looking for the guys and not looking, as you're very quick to point out, in the headlines. What's the gap between the guys in the headlines and the guys you're looking for?
Look, I'm not interested in the man in the suit or the executive washroom. There's plenty of news about those guys. Any respectable newspaper or magazine will take care of that. But all the rest of us, from the McMansion to the trailer, you don't really see them. Here's one for you, Tom.
Mm.
Do you know why tornadoes always hit trailer parks?
Well, there's a lot of them.
Right on. They're never in the news until a tornado hits them.
Only when they're blown to pieces.
Yeah, and as they go, the world goes. They pull a lever just like you, and what they think about Iraq affects people in Iraq. There's this nausea, this malady out there. What are we? What are we supposed to be? What do we think? And where are we going? That's what I'm trying to tap into. And you know it, and I know it, and who's ever around the country driving around in their car or washing their dishes right now knows it.
But you're very clear right off the bat, and of course you would be. I mean, you're seen widely in the mold of Hunter S. Thompson, the kind of gonzo crew. But you say, I'm not coming at this as a sociologist. You're really coming at it as a storyteller. Remind us of how you got set out on this journey that ended up coming up with these stories. I mean, and they're wild all over the place. Biker gang in Oakland and kind of biker gang / fight club, and you're right in the middle of it. Sea-level professional football team way down there in the weeds in Amarillo, Texas. Little Bighorn reenactors in Montana. What got you pointed at this strata, this stripe of American society, Charlie?
Okay, that's a great question. So we can tap dance for a while. First of all, you strip all that stuff away. People go away to normal jobs, right? You know, you're trying the C-level football because you don't want to claw your way to middle management. You know, you don't want to clean hotel rooms. You know, that's the majority of us. How this got started was my mother, and it got started through the election. And my mother said, this wasn't about Christian conservatives. If it was about Christian conservatives, we would have elected Pat Robertson years ago. So if 17 million Christian conservatives voted for Bush, what about the 41 million other people? Who are they? They drink beer on Sunday and watch football. So, yeah, Ma, what are we talking about? You know, and the superstructure, CNN and the New York Times, gay marriage. And we're going to have the head of the so-and-so on this side yelling at him will be the head of so-and-so, but no gay guys, regular gay guys. Look, you know, I'm a rancher from Oklahoma, and here's what I feel about it. Mm. And then the straight guy who feels something about that discourse is not happening. The stuff in the streets, you know, white people, it's FCC, what's my nice word going to be? Complaining to themselves, yes, about they feel like a minority. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody gets a point. For how long? Like, we didn't do anything to the Koreans. Why do they get a point? So, you know, black guys are talking about stuff, and red guys and brown guys and us guys. And the gonzo bit, Look, so I look for themes in American life, sexuality, war. Why is my generation aggressive? Why do we have gangs and we fight? You know, the suburban malaise, you know, like I'm a white and on and on and on. I want to talk to the people who make these things go, not the people who talk about these people. And the Gonzo thing, I don't know. That's just so people will notice and you can sell a book. I'm not Hunter Thompson. I've just started getting into him. I never read him growing up.
Charlie, we're going to see exactly what you are in these stories, and we're looking forward to it. I wish you'd read a little bit just to give us a sense. Maybe from right off the top of the book in the preface there, you lay out a kind of premise and then whip around on it real quick. Could you read just from the beginning there a bit for us, Charlie?
Interesting you should ask. I just happen to have it right here.
It's magic.
Wow, radio. Close your eyes.
Okay,
and
we're there.
And listen. Okay, this is from the beginning. Excuse me. There are certain things an American man should know. And if he does not know them, he has at least been convinced that he should somehow know them, even if they are a detriment to him. The American man has been taught that while it is better to avoid a fight, he should have been in a fight. That honor cannot always be defended with reason. He should never admit fear. He should strive to put the blade in his adversary's chest, not his back. An American man should know how to load and fire a gun. He should know how to ride a horse. Bet on a horse, bet on the stock market, and bet on the cards. A good man should know a woman's body and how to please her. His woman, in turn, should never speak anything but well of him in public. An American man should have been raised in church, rejected the church, and eventually found virtue in church. The American man should be educated. He should work. He should honor his debts and live within his means. He should be able to recite poetry and have bits of true philosophy at his fingertips. He should be able to play an instrument and know how to help a rose grow. An American man should dress and speak his language well. He should be handy and mechanically inclined, and yet his nails must be clean. A man should have children, and at some point his children should reject him. And in the course of his life, a man's children should return and find virtue in him. This is what an American man should be. Of course, no such man has ever existed, and no man probably ever will. It may be that he prefers men. It may be that he was born weak-bodied. He may have been abandoned. He may be dull-witted. He may live in a trailer or a ranch house or a squat city apartment. Men crave dignity and fulfillment, and when they cannot attain those, they become unhappy, quarrelsome, small-minded, blowhards, over-intellectuals, chauvinists, cowards, dopers, abstainers, racists, talk show know-it-alls, and critics, and bloggers. That's what I just threw that in there. Some men are strong despite their shortcomings and are able to get on with the dreary business of living. This sort of man is at ease with the idea that in the great scheme of things, he means absolutely nothing. And then there are the American men who, unable to grasp the ideal, begin to call themselves a minority, a victim. They pine for those good old days that were never very good.
Charlie LaDuff, reading from his new book, U.S. Guys, The True and Twisted Mind of the American Man. He's been out on the road in all kinds of corners, and we're going to go there with him. But let me ask you, Charlie, just right off the bat, you say men crave dignity and fulfillment. The implication is they're not getting it in this country these days. But this was the country that was supposed to be all about dignity and fulfillment. Are men in a special bad spot right now? Guys, the guys?
I think so. And let me, you know, I'm sure we'll get to it later, but us gals, I think a woman should write it because I, you know, one of the characters in this book is me. I'm taking you through it. So it's hard for me to take you through women's lives and to have women speak honestly and let me participate in their lives.
So but stick with the guys then. What's the problem you're pointing at? What do you
find? Here's the root. Well, there's a lot of roots, and I'm no sociologist. I just know what I see. Mm. It began with my generation with the baby boomers, and the if it feels good, do it. So they did it, and they walked out the door. And now you got a generation of men who weren't raised by men. They were raised by their mother's values and the images of men that they gleaned from TV.
So there's a problem with men, but they brought it on themselves by being what? By walking
by
away
running
from
out
duty?
On your responsibilities like the American man should do.
So you're not pointing at globalization, you're not pointing at feminism, you're not pointing at downsizing. You're saying It's slacker boomers who brought this on?
No, that's just part. You just asked me one.
Yep,
you're
yep.
asking me to explain the whole American heart. Now, we can get into our jobs and how the rich are stealing from the working people or reordering it. Or we can talk about feminism. But this isn't a macho book. This isn't a Men Are From Mars book or, you know, here's the guide to being a dude. It's not that. It's just this is a book that I hope both black men and white men like because it says the stuff. And where does this come from? Well, part of the legacy is slavery. You know, I'm just trying to – part of it is cultures colliding on each other. The world's going so fast that men living now are really confused. You know, digitization, globalization, mass migration, so many Asians, we don't know what it is to be a nation and to be a man existing in that. How do I do that? It's insane. Don't you feel it? Life's insane out there.
It's not hard to feel it. You say twisted. So is it? What's twisted here? The reality? The men themselves? Are you saying American men are twisted? Do you mean that in a derogatory way? Are you mocking them or just
no,
being
I love
a brother?
Them. They're my brothers. Twisted. So a lot of us get high. I'm not going to take up the airways with, you know, the numbers. People out there know what I'm talking about. A lot of guys get high. A lot of guys blow their money at the casinos. A lot of guys are working two jobs. A lot of guys have two or three wives. A lot of guys don't have savings.
Charlie, we're going to ask you for a lot of stories, but let's get our listeners in right away, too, from Panama City, Florida. Glenn, you're on the air with Charlie LaDuff.
Yeah, Tom, thank you. Hello, sure. Charlie.
How you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing good. Let me tell you that I am a truck driver. I work in the construction business, proud of all of that stuff.
Mm.
This is my point. And that is that I think that the contemporary male is always portrayed on TV as the fall guy, an idiot, and the dope. And I'm a liberal-thinking person, but I want to say that I think that there's a reason for this. And, you know, I'm a little bit perplexed, but I hate to say I think a lot of the people that are at the highest level of the entertainment industry are gay, and that's all right, but the problem is that I think they use their position to dynamite the so-called nuclear family. That's why there's no respect from kids who watch TV and they see the breadwinner. He's just a dope.
Wow, Glenn, you're taking us straight
Whoa,
into it. This is LaDuff territory, Charlie. What
do
you say?
That's what we talk about out there. I don't know. Look, that's how you feel, Glenn, brother, my man. Look, I know some of them. Yeah, there's some gay guys at the upper levels of, you know, the entertainment industry. I can't count. You know what I'm saying? You see things on TV, for sure. But the whole point is to express what Glenn's saying is the structure's being dynamited, and he's looking for an answer. And no one's even expressing the fact that it's being dynamited and how it is. Glenn thinks is show me, Glenn. You know, the report's not there on that guy. You know what I'm saying?
You're not buying the gay conspiracy at the top of Hollywood to blow up the nuclear family?
Well, you know, no. But I'll say one thing. Let me give you a little story about, let's take the Christian conservatives who are supposedly wanting to take over this country.
Okay.
Now, come on, that is in the news. That's the subtext of the sort of, you know, superstructure. The big media does imply that. So I don't want to talk to the guy with the Brill Cream who heads the super mega church. I'm not interested in that guy. I want the guy in his, you know, slapboard home out in the country who is a Pentecostal. His daughter has a meth problem. He's got the grandson. The grandson's a little overweight. Now, here's the envision this.
Mm.
Little 9-year-old boy got his hands buried in a bag of Doritos. He's overweight. They're out in the cotton patch in Georgia. They got the digital TV. It's getting blasted into his house. Grandpa's watching this kid watch reruns of Will and Grace and Seinfeld. The little boy doesn't go outside to play. And so the kid's got more in common with the Upper West Side of Manhattan than he does with the kid in the next cotton patch 5 miles down the road. The old man is scared that the outside world's trying to take him over, tell him he's dumb. Tell him his culture's terrible. Tell him he doesn't deserve to have one.
Why doesn't he turn off the TV and teach him how to, I don't know, ride a horse, you know?
He does. He does, but come on. I mean, like, that. Don't we all wish, hey, kid, turn off the TV? But, like, We're a bunch of idiots. These images, fast images, violent images, sexy images, look like this kid, you know. White images, you know, talk to Black America, like the beauty myth, the image. I'd like to turn it off, but I can't turn it off. It's all around me. I'm going insane.
Charlie, let me ask you about what's embedded there in Glenn's observation, his view.
His opinion.
His opinion. The idea that we've got people at the top in power in this country now who were not at the top or in power decades back when it was John Wayne on the horse, and they're changing the agenda. He's pointing to gays in Hollywood, and he's got a view that looks that way. Others might point other places. How do you see men, the guys, dealing with the fact that it's not just guys, you know, in the powerhouse now?
Are you talking about women?
It's women. It's guys who aren't white who now have power where they didn't before. It may be gays who have more power than they did before because it's more accepted to be out. Is this something that you found, you know, is torturing the minds of the American guys you talk to, or are they tolerant about it?
Some of them, but listen to who you just threw out there, right? Like gay guys. People of color guys. See how that I had a mumble
Americans.
Over that phrase?
Yeah.
They're all in there. Exactly. Each and every one of them makes up this mosaic. So don't get this book is not about the white guy's mind. It's also about the Black guy's mind. And so, yeah, there's men out there like that. The whole thing is, you know, we're smelling something off what Glenn was saying, which is, okay, there we go. He's down there in Florida, truck driver. He thinks there's this gay conspiracy. So you know what we say about him, uneducated cracker. But he feels it. Even if he's wrong, it's nice that he could call up your show, very good show, sir, where he can articulate it. Because if you don't let him articulate it, stuff starts to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Stuff starts to happen.
To say the least, your kind of prophecy here is that we're headed in this country toward poverty, breeding resentment, breeding violence. That's your prophecy. Glenn points where he points. Where do you find the guys you're talking to, where are their minds turning to explain the many stripes of unhappiness and frustration that they're feeling in the world where you find them, Charlie? What are they looking to?
They look to each other. They discuss it quietly on their couches so you can't hear it because it's not good conversation. The media doesn't put it on. They do it in their churches and in their mosques, right? Know what I'm talking about?
Mm.
They do it in their clubs. They do it in their VFW halls. They do it everywhere. And the whole thing is, we all know it. This is not in. I've uncovered something. All I've done was expressed it. Yeah, and there are the haves and the have-nots. Thanks, Mr. Edwards. But a guy told me the most dangerous man out there is the used to have. And more we're having used to haves. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Something's brewing, and I don't read about it. I don't, and it's brewing.
Charlie, You say you're not the Hunter Thompson type. We'll take that. On the other hand, you're not the regular type. You just walked away from a national reporter job at the New York Times. Not many journalists do that. When you went to the biker club in Oakland, you didn't just watch. You became part of the action. You got in there and fought a really rough fight club type of fighting. Why do you do that?
Well, I got my booty kicked.
We read that.
Why do I do it? Yeah. A lot of. Thanks for asking. And thanks for having me on, really. This, you know, it's an excellent show you have. And I write because I'm not as articulate with my mouth and I shoot my mouth off. But I try, you know, get the book and hate it if you want to. But it's a better expression of what I'm trying to say. Fight Club, one. I grew up, you know, like that's with my brothers and, you know, my mom held us together. And I got three dads. So there's that sort of anger that my generation feels about that, too. Look, man, I want to have a good time with my life. I don't want to be the sort of reporter to say, okay, and then he hit you in the head, and how did that feel, sir? No, I want to feel it. You know, I want to, that's kind of cool. Look at this crowd. My stomach hurts. I want to feel that. And three, I fought a 320-pound Black man. Now, for the most part of my blood quantum, I'm white. I've got some native blood, but you can call me white. I'm all right with that.
Native as in Chippewa, I think I read.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So, little white guy, big Black guy, That's the American psychosis. That's the kind of thing you're saying. What do they talk about? Where do they say it? Little white guy, big black guy.
And he's whopping you, and you write, "I'm thinking I'm already dead, a little man who has taken a beating for no decent reason except wanting to be wanted, wanting to prove his mettle to a group of strangers, wanting to be accepted by them. If you can't understand it, you're walking dead. This is the exhilaration of life." You write, really? Having the tar whooped out of you?
Yeah, but I faced it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it was just a practice run for when it's got to go down, and I'm walking around the street. I don't have to fear a man because that guy, yeah, he beat me, but I did stagger him, hit him a couple good times. And in real life, that's all you need to carry to be a man and not have to be afraid of, like, you know, this boogeyman, this psychosis within your head. Like, I'm okay, and if the guy comes after me, I can sting him. And if you feel that confidence, then you don't have to have this bigotry in your head. You don't have to have this false fear.
Charlie, you get around. Tell us more stories here. You went to Amarillo, Texas, down with the way, way, way down there pro football team. What did you find there about the American dream, about ambition?
I do have a little piece here I could read.
Oh, sure. Yes, there's one where you're talking with a guy named Hershey. Yeah. I guess the point is, why are you here playing semi-pro football in Amarillo, Texas? And he says, well, the money stinks, but I've got a dream.
Right. And the thing is, there's all these reasons. One, again, most people don't go to church on Sunday. They watch football, so it's the entertainment. You want to read it. I like football. Hey, that's a good story. Two, the playing field is one of the few places, I maintain only one of two places in America, where the racial equation is inverted and the black man's the majority. Now we can discuss if everybody on this field is an alpha male.
Mm.
We can talk about race, bro. You know what I mean? Like, because you guys are all alpha. We can talk about that. Is the black man genetically, physically superior to the white man? Is the white man genetically more intelligent than the black man? You know, you can do that there.
Charlie, read it for us, because it wasn't just equality, though. You've got that there. But it's also this idea of dream that goes right across color lines. He says to you, it's not good money, but I got a dream. Could you read a bit for us from right there?
Surely, yeah. Part three of the planet is like, I don't want to wash airplanes in the desert, man.
Yeah.
I played some college ball, and I got a dream to play in the NFL. So this place is the last stop, USA.
Right.
For the alpha male that we worship on Sunday. So here we go. There it was, there in Hershey's statement. The American is stuck, infantilized, holding on to some BS dream that's never going to happen. I'm going to be a pro football player, he thinks. Yeah, and my cousin's going to be a rocker, and all those kids in Detroit are going to be rappers. The contract's just around the corner. The unpublished novelist, the country's full of them, these people of my generation. More and more, all there is this cheap dream. What else is there? At least Hershey had an airplane job waiting for him. What about the rest of us? The jobs are gone, the benefits. I ask my generation, and they'll tell you they don't expect to get Social Security. Who told us that? No one. They just somehow convinced us of it. No jobs and a mountain of debt left to us by the baby boomers. You can't go to a factory anymore and make a good life. The factory's gone. I went to the Walmart with one of the players, Devin Lemons, to buy some shoes. They were all cheap and made in China. We don't make shoes or much of anything anymore. What are you going to do if you don't make it in football? I asked Lemons, who had made it all the way to the Washington Redskins practice squad before tumbling down to the deuce. He stood there dumbfounded. I don't know, man. That's all he could find to say, standing like a man who returns to his home to find that his wife has left with the children. $8 an hour and no bennies. I don't know, man, so keep dreaming. The confusion and the desperation of the regular man. Everyone forgets him except him. The plump guy on the op-ed pages says the loss of jobs is somehow good for the world. Murky arguments of comparative advantage and the American man's lack of ambition. And maybe it's true. But the world is still round, just cracked in 100 parts. And the regular man doesn't understand it beyond the fact that he's the man stuck in the cross currents of history, a sacrifice to a new world order. His troubles and pain are forgotten. They come to him every 4 years during the presidential elections and ask him his opinion while he eats his plate of eggs, and then 30 seconds later, he goes forgotten. Who speaks for him? What is he to do? What is he to do? He holds on to his cheap football dream, and we all go about encouraging him. We do it, and we snort coke and drink beer and watch him shatter his kneecaps.
Charlie LaDuff brings it to us from Amarillo, Texas, and semi-pro ball there. He's reading from his new book, U.S. Guys, The True and Twisted Mind of the American Man. Let's get some more listeners in here from Augusta, Georgia. Michael's on the line. Hi, Michael. You're on with Charlie.
Hi. Hi. How you doing? This is Michael. I disagree that the American male is twisted. I mean, I consider myself extremely normal.
Mm.
You know, I have a relatively good job. I have a wife, four children.
Good for you.
The problems that has got the American male down is, you know, I have company insurance, but I can't afford to go to the doctor. Mm. The deductible, the copays.
Why not? Really, brother, why not?
Why not? Because
yeah.
There's the mortgage, there's the car payment, and there's feeding the kids. And my point that I was going to make that discourages me, the only thing that discourages me is I think that our government, our politicians have completely lost sight of what the normal person does in this country. You know, we watch television, we see every day another giveaway, another $4 billion here, $3 billion here, $1 trillion deficit, and we're struggling just to pay our bills. But we can send money to every country in the world, and we can't afford to go to the doctor. If that is the downside, and I hear it from my coworkers and people who work under me, that we don't understand what happened to taking care of our own.
Michael, we got it. Charlie, what do you say? What do you hear?
Gosh, hang on the line, Mike. I hear that, and I apologize to you. Look, I'm not, you know, Melville. So if twisted bothers you, that's just one word in this whole book. Twisted doesn't mean, like, we're sick.
What does it mean? Like, what does it mean?
It just means, did you hear what Michael was saying? It means we're Americans.
Twisted, and, you know, means we're Americans, or wrapped around the axle a little bit here?
Yeah, I'll get there. What I mean is we're Americans and he's down. That's not what we are. We're optimistic. And he and his coworkers are not. And that's twisted in the sense that I'm all balled up inside, you know? No one's saying it for me and no one's looking here. And what happened? You know, you just heard it. Mm-hmm. That's the guy. And my friend, you're not twisted in terms of depraved. Just got a bunch of stuff in your stomach. That's what I mean.
Money, was it a big issue? When you talk to people on the road, it's big for Michael. It certainly must be big for a lot. Is it top of mind for the men you talk to?
Money, America doesn't exist without money. Yeah, it's on everybody's mind.
Terry is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Terry, you're on the air.
Hi there, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
All right, great. This is a great topic, and I'm calling in because I was raised in a family with only sisters and kind of an absent father. So
okay.
One of the things that I always found was that men were kind of mysterious. And there is a book out which really opened my eyes, which might bookend your guest's book. It's called A Self-Made Man. It's by a woman by the name of Nora Vincent.
Oh, yeah. We had her on maybe a year ago.
Right.
This is the woman who passed as a man and described what it was like.
Months. Yeah, right. And I could go on for a long time about that, but there are several points that I found very interesting in it, which is that she went into it thinking, aha, I'll be on the other side of the wall, I'll be inside the citadel, I'll have all these great times. And she found that generally men's lives suck. and that they also had her chapters on men trying to date or on herself as a man trying to date were just heart-wrenching because of the really unkind way that women treated her as
a man. So did it leave you sympathetic to men, more sympathetic to men, Terry, or women have their own problems?
Yeah, she kind of wound up feeling more sympathetic. She started her experience by joining a men's bowling league or a team on a men's bowling league.
Right, where they sort of poured out their hearts to her and the troubles they were having, and she got some insight right there. Let us put it to Charlie. Mr. LaDuff, what about women looking at men? Do you find a sympathetic eye? Is there a good conversation cross the gender line here? Do you find, you know?
Well, here's what I got to say. That's a nice book. I got a book called Us Guys, True and Twisted Mind of the American Man. It's on sale now. And, you know, I've got a new daughter, and I just quit my job. So I come out, buy this book, baby. But I'm now a stay-at-home mom. So, you know, I'm starting to get the woman thing. I mean, yeah, come on. I'm not like, I don't get women, but even though I wrote it. Yeah, there's a whole book out there to be done, like the woman's point of view, like us gals. And I encourage somebody to write it.
But the things that you're finding from men, what are they telling you about women? Are women giving them a sympathetic hearing these days? Do they, you know, are they empathetic toward what men are dealing with in their American lives in 2006 and 2007?
That really wasn't the conversation. I mean, I could tell you my feelings if you want me to.
Sure.
Okay. Men. Men are worried about it. They're worried about how to come off. You know, there's a beauty myth now being, you know, foisted upon men. They sell us product. You know, it's not called makeup. It's product and the metrosexual. And then on the other side, you know, hey baby, the gym body and that. But that's as old as humanity, you know, just trying to be the peacock and get the peahen. But again, if you don't have a dad sort of teaching you how to treat women, how a gentleman behaves himself. See, more and more the family is breaking down. Every year the statistic rises a little bit more. You know, we just have fatherless boys who are going to have to learn the hard way through bad lessons how to be decent to women.
Let me take a call from Paul in Boston. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to – I'm fascinated by this conversation and in how it connects to the work I do around race and racism.
Okay.
There's two points I want to get comments on. One is the way that this often gets racialized, and so very readily in the mainstream discourse where we talk about dysfunction in the black community. But as we hear in this conversation, when we start looking at rates of drug addiction and all other sorts of things like that, we see a lot of things happening in a white community that don't get named as dysfunction. The second side of that, I would say, is when we look at the history, recent history of people sort of going quote-unquote postal or who's shooting people in high schools. It's always white men and white boys, but we don't name it as that. So it's like that's not supposed to happen in this town. And I wanted to get Charlie's thoughts on that.
Charlie?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just watch it. Look at the newspaper. And, you know, and a man, he walked down 42nd Street and bought a hot dog. He walked up next to a black man who, you see that little, the pen stroke, the color, like there's the man and then there's the black man. And yes, the suburbs are infected too. They're with all of this stuff, you know. I'm sitting in Detroit, and the racial legacy here is a tough one, right? No one alive, I'm not pointing my fingers at them, what your grandfathers gave you. But, you know, this 8 Mile thing, Eminem and the 8 Mile. Okay. But the jobs are gone. So let's, you know, and the kids out there, the city's, you know, it's kind of rough looking, and now out there starting to get rough looking. And the white kids have these problems, and they always have, by the way, you know, drugs and low-paying jobs. But we're still talking about race here, and we're not getting together as Americans. We're saying, what are we going to do? Because the caller's correct. We haven't had the discussion. You know, whenever like a black man and a white man get together and they're comfortable with each other, that's all you talk about. Like, oh God, it's so good to get it off my chest, man. You know what? But we can't do it in groups. We just haven't reached it, and I don't know if we're ever gonna. And I hope the book helps. But the caller's right. Yeah, there's a double-edged sword here. But I'm not saying like I don't say white culture stinks. I don't. I love it. So, yeah, I'm not going to bag on Whitey. But, you know, it'd be nice to extend your hand to a human being and let's try to solve this. Let's try to solve it.
Let's go to Martin in Portsmouth, Virginia. Hi, Martin. You're on the air with Charlie LaDuff.
Hey, what's up, Charlie?
How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, man. It's the trip. I like the call from the guy who said he's normal because I've never met a normal person.
Right.
And, I used to think I was crazy. I realize everybody else is. Hey,
No, you're crazy.
Yeah,
don't sell yourself short. You're real crazy.
Fight Club,
hey,
next.
My, what I'm trying to get at is you're talking about people getting high, and people get high in so many different ways. I get high on music, and it's like my day-to-day life, my job life, I don't feel like that's me. I feel like it's when I'm out getting down to some blues or some jazz or something, you know, and like I'm young and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a college dropout, and I ain't worried about money, but I am, you know. It's just like, and you're talking about these guys fighting this, we all get off on different ways, you know. So that's what makes us all the same.
Charlie, what's your advice to Martin here? Out of college, getting high on music, what's the road look like, Charlie?
You put a tie on, go to the office, work a job you're not digging. Is that about right?
I'm not in an office, you know.
Okay.
I'm a construction worker. You know, you're a blue-collar man.
You working?
Yeah,
you working,
I'm working right now. Okay. I'm on the phone. I'm sitting in my van. So.
Well, here's my advice for you. Are you on lunch break?
Yeah.
Are you on dinner break?
Yeah, lunch, you know.
Okay, because if you weren't, man, you know, put the phone down and go work hard. That's part of our problem. But here's what I would say. Listen, save some money, man. Okay? Be parsimonious. Pay your debts. Don't ruin your credit. Do all the things that, you know, that this is what we're supposed to be. Go try church a little bit. I know, man, I hear the Dixie on your voice. You know about church. Don't throw your church away. Save your money. Tell your mother you love her. And don't hate. Hey, you're going to be great.
There you got it. Right from our guru, Charlie LaDuff of the day. Martin, good luck and thanks for calling. Let's get one from Providence, Rhode Island. Rob, U.S. guy, you're on the line with Charlie LaDuff.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Good.
Hi, good. Good day.
I'm calling. I feel like American men are taught at an early age that they're not sensitive and compassionate and caring. And I've spent the last few years really trying to break out of that. Now, I was in a relationship with a woman for about a year who was really calling me on a lot of my programming and really helping me work through it. And then recently she actually broke up with me because she's more attracted to men that are more masculine and that are stronger.
You tried to get sensitive and then she dropped you? Is that what you're saying, Rob?
It's more complicated than that, but I just feel like I don't have any ground to stand on. I don't know how I should feel about that. You know?
So to whipsaw it here, you tried to be more the modern man for her, and then she left you for the traditional guy.
I wasn't trying to do it for her. I've been working on that for years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she's definitely looking for someone that's more masculine and more traditional.
Charlie?
Wow, dude. She took you. This is kind of cool. I feel like Dr. Phil. But
yeah.
Why not?
Look, Dr. Charlie.
She took your ego, man. Crumbled it up like a paper bag and threw in the wastebasket. Go back in the garbage can and get your ego back. There's nothing wrong with you. You might have learned some lessons and keep them, but your problem is I'm going to tell you your problem without looking in your eyes in 10 seconds. You don't know who you are. You're asking people to tell you who you are. Trust the stuff that your mother gave you. Go out into the world and learn. Guess what? That was a great experience for you. You just learned a huge lesson. You calm down. You are a little more sensitive. You like it. But, you know, don't just give your heart over to somebody that doesn't deserve it. Relax. Don't let people tell you how you should be.
Rob, there
you're
got
welcome.
It straight off
That's
the road.
That's for free.
That's for free from Charlie LaDuff, and he's been watching it all over the country. Let's get a call from New Haven, Connecticut. Brian, you're on the air with Charlie LaDuff.
Hey, Charlie.
Yes, sir.
I saw you on the Colbert Report, loved you, and you're a little more in-depth tonight than that funny man will let you do last night or the night before.
Well, you know, I voted. Let's do it together, brother.
I hear you.
Like this.
I just wanted to tell you, I'm in an 18-year men's group where we have been able to explore what men are about. We've had gay men. We've had crazy, wild, and crazy, rough, tough men. We've had business people. We've had doctors, dentists, the whole nine yards. And it's been a wonderful thing. In fact, I went to a meeting last night. And it also opens up all kinds of issues and allows men to say exactly what they want to say. In a society where, by and large, men can't do that because of the constraints that are put on us and the way we're supposed to be.
So what do you talk about in that clubhouse, Brian?
You name it.
What's the secret?
Clubhouse.
The secret conversation. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? What's the secret conversation you can have there that you can't just have anywhere else?
Secret conversation?
Well, I don't know. What you say you can't have it elsewhere. So what is it?
Well, how are men raised in a society to be open, closed, or which way do you think it is?
Well, I'm saying, like, it sounds to me, look, you got a group, but I this isn't sort of like just masculinity and, you know, like how should I behave? It's also like the things that consume us. Don't forget the themes of life, race, sexuality, class, jobs, work. You know, it's not just about like how am I feeling. It's like where am I living? You know, like Native Americans, like, you know. Yeah, look what they did to us, but they were fighting with each other. They still don't. The Crow don't like the Sioux. They don't get along. The Crow and the Cheyenne, very manly men, right? They're rural. They ride bareback horses. They hunt, and they can't get along. And it's been this way before the Europeans ever got here. Interesting. So the club might be one thing, but I bet you the club doesn't. You know, you don't talk honestly about race in that club. You talk honestly about race with your friends, maybe not even then, maybe not even with yourself. That's what the book's about. This is what a guy should be. This is just, I'm hanging out, and this is what guys are talking about when I get in there and do my Borat. But I'm not Borat. I'm really me. And let me say this before we go. I know I went off on a rant. Borat comes in. That's okay, we're anti-Semites in this country, but we're the least anti-Semitic people in the world. And so why doesn't somebody go over there and do those guys, and let's ask the Europeans about their society of convenient abstention. We do all the work. We die in Iraq. You have oil and complain about it. This is on the American man's mind. Let's go pick on them. Why are we always the dopes and the fat guys and stupid Americans, you know? I'm tired of it, and so is most people. We're good people.
Charlie, we hear it.
Brian, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Let me get one more at least here. Chris from Providence, Rhode Island. You're on with Charlie Liduff.
Hi, Charlie. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks for calling. I'm very well. I just went off on a rant.
I'm really looking forward to going out and getting your book, first of all. And I just wanted to say I think it's a really interesting time for U.S. guys. I think for the first time, you know, I'm a young guy, but mm-hmm. Seems like for the first time we're defining ourselves, and I don't have to, you know, wear a baseball cap and watch football on Sundays to be a guy. You know, I can be myself and not feel constrained by traditional images of guys.
Chris, it says here you're an art school grad and a construction worker, so you're having it both ways.
I'm having it both ways, and so I get to see a lot of different sides of you know, guyness of you know what it is to be a guy. I work with the guys who, you know, stick their heads out the windows of the van and holler at the girls on the sidewalks. But then, you know, and some of those guys I'll associate with in social situations. But you know, and then I've got, you know, my art school side, you know, my more creative side.
We got it. So there's the upside of this time, maybe affirming. Our time is short. Chris, thanks for calling. Charlie, what about it? You've got some tough stories in here, too, but also a lot of stick-to-itiveness among the American men you talk with. Do you see the upside potential here in this, you know, kind of roiling picture you've got? Is there room for something good, a sort of more open, flexible definition model to come out of it?
Yeah, I suppose there is. You know, and I'll look for it. You know, that's a really good question. Hopefully, but I'm wanting to do step one here, to articulate the feelings of the mass of people out there that I know that I don't see. And there's nothing wrong with them, as I wrote, as we said earlier, except everything. And then the sentence that follows that. But that's the way it's always been. So it's just going a little fast. We're trying to catch our feet.
Charlie Liduff brings it to us from the road. Lots of amazing stories in here. We barely got to scratch the surface, but we had a good time. I love your Dr. Phil imitation, Charlie. That's first class.
Thank you, sir.
The new book is U.S. Guys, The True and Twisted Mind of the American Man. Charlie Liduff, thank you so much for joining us.
A real pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.